Willem Dafoe played the actor who played the vampire in Nosferatu, and he's played more than one actual vampires. He's been the Green Goblin, the good-hearted, ill-fated Sergeant Elias in Platoon, and even Jesus himself. Last year, he was the stern but caring motel manager in the Florida Project. Now, he's Vincent van Gogh. In the new drama At Eternity's Gate, Dafoe reunited with the painter-turned-director Julian Schnabel, whom Dafoe has worked with since Schnabel's directing debut in 1996, portraying the other famous painter in the last season of his life. The casting drew some double takes, since Van Gogh died when he was 37 and Dafoe is, well, 63. But the actor has a good answer for that, which you'll hear in our conversation. We also touched on avoiding the clichés about Vincent Van Gogh, how Dafoe learned to paint for real for this part, and why he gravitates towards outcast characters.
What was your initial sort of read on Vincent as a person? What were the personality traits, or what was the heart of it that you sort of glommed onto and wanted to focus on?
There are two questions there. You know, what I thought of him before is pretty much what everyone thinks. You know, he's kind of the poster boy for the tortured, gifted artist that didn't get his due. Ahead of his time, tormented. I didn't know a lot about him. I knew his work. And then as far as what my expectations or what I wanted to concentrate on was really just my response to the text and how Julian described what he wanted to do. But the truth is, we were working with a strong script, but we made this movie in the shooting, and he really encouraged a special kind of collaboration. Because I know him for 30 years. I've been with him in the studio. He's done portraits of me. I know him quite well. He's not the kind of artist that has an idea and then just executes. He doesn't quite know what he wants to do until he gets there. He's very fluid that way. He's very organic. He gets in a room. He gets in front of that canvas, and it happens. He doesn't paint ideas. I feel like he collects things that he loves, and then he starts to order with them and starts to have a conversation with them. So where we were going to go with this, we didn't really know. I just knew. I knew him. I knew he's been in his head. He's been thinking about Van Gogh and all his life. So he has a real personal stake. I knew him well. I felt like I was the right guy to play the role. And we just proceeded, you know, learned to paint, read a lot of the biographies, read his letters, you know, really steeped myself in that information. And the painting really is what opened the door to have it be absorbed in a way that was personal and meaningful to me, rather than, you know, a kind of exercise to explain. It became an experience for me, a transformative experience.
So you actually took lessons in painting, or you studied how to paint like him?
Nah, I didn't learn how to paint like him. I learned how to paint like Julian, because Julian was my teacher. And lessons is a funny word. I mean, I would hang out with Julian and we'd go places and he'd show me how to hold the brush. He'd get me familiar with materials, how to organize things, all the kind of practical things. And then with time, he started teaching me how to see. You know, I always go back to, there was a moment where very early, before we started shooting, we were painting and I was painting and he was teaching me how to just make marks and paint light, not try to draw when I'm painting, not try to make a good likeness, but really looking at that tree that we see out that window right now and seeing color, seeing shape, seeing light, seeing darkness. If he was looking at that right now, he might say to me, look, you see that dark spot in there? In the second window pane down there, see that dark spot? Paint that, paint that. Now you see another dark spot that's like it? Paint that over there. And there's another dark spot, there's another dark spot. You see that yellow there? You know, so you're dealing with very specific things. It's not as specific as deconstructing it, but you're seeing it in a different way that takes you away from, you know, what it signifies and really gets you more into the experience of what it is, because that tree is light. That tree is a living thing. It's nature, and it's changing, and its colors And there's a swirl. There's a swirl of rising and falling of phenomenon in that tree. And you get into that head, and that really introduces you into kind of what Van Gogh's been talking about, at least to my mind, or at least for me, that was the way to enter.
But Van Gogh has such, obviously, a distinct style, such distinct brushstrokes, and the glomming of the paint on the canvas. It strikes me that there's actually less forgiveness for depicting his paintings inaccurately than portraying him as a person inaccurately.
There was great pressure to paint well, but at the same time, in the spirit of Van Gogh, we weren't just making copies of him. We were making our versions of his copies. Quite often, you know, because we had to make lots of copies, not just for set dressing, but in a lot of the scenes I'm painting. And for example, in the scene where I paint the shoes, I painted those in real time. I practiced it. Julian coached me before I was practiced at that. That was a particular thing. What was important about that was I was actually painting, you know, basically from A to Z. And even though we cut away from it, you still get the sense that, you know, there's no stunt painter or, you know, it's not cut because, you know, people are fixing it. There are other places where a canvas would be prepared, and then in the scene, I would work an area. Those were basically two ways that we worked. But there was lots of painting. There were lots of copies made. And it was always interesting that we'd come in the morning, and sometimes Julian would see a painting on the wall and said, take that down, get my paints. He'd sit down and he'd work on it. And the truth is, sometimes it would go away from being a good likeness of the Van Gogh that we know so well, but it was a better painting. And that's not to say that he paints, you know, a Van Gogh better, but he would work on that copy in a way that made it come alive. And to see that was exciting. And that was also part of my introduction, my education into new ways of seeing. And fundamentally, it wasn't about likeness. It wasn't about the surface of things. It was about the spirit of things, you know. And Van Gogh was, you know, he said, this is a rough quote, but I think I can honor the spirit of it. He said, basically, if I drew better, I would be unhappy, you know, because then he'd be, get sucked into a kind of likeness, a kind of precision. He was freer than that. He liked to paint fast. He said also, you know, there's something in me that wants me to be reckless. You know, he wanted to contact what's the unseen, find the thing that's eternal in, you know, things that are temporal. That was his big connection to nature. So the whole ball of wax is pretty interesting. And then painting becomes a very practical device to crack that thinking open. And it also, as an actor, gives me a practical application to open me up to a new way of seeing that allows me to think a new way. And when you have that shift, you sort of leave yourself behind, and then you become available to feel like you're someone else. So then not only are you willing yourself to pretend, but you really do think differently. You're not the same person because you've learned something that shifted your consciousness.
Was there anything you wanted to avoid in terms of depicting mental illness or depression?
Not consciously, but I think clearly, you know, it's like we never talked about these things. We just did, you know? But it was clear that we weren't going to lean on or go towards that cliche, that well-known thing of poor Van Gogh, the poor guy that was a genius and tortured artist that wasn't understood. Part of that is there's something joyous in this portrait because he's in the groove. He's working away. Yes, he has problems. He has social problems. He's frightened by, you know, sometimes he's so overwhelmed by his vision of what he sees that he says he loses consciousness, and it scares him. And he's also concerned about how he can live in this society. He's also a little miffed that people don't appreciate his work. But he's in contact with something, and he's painting well. So there was a joyous part of him that that's not normally associated with him.
Did you relate to him in the sense of being in the groove, not necessarily relating to society or people in kind of a conventional way?
I don't, you know, I like people and I'm social enough. And while I don't feel like I'm, you know, the most charming person in the world, you know, like at a cocktail party or something, it's pretty challenging to find my place. But I think that's true of most people. I mean, I don't, how could I feel with the kind of life I have like an outsider? I just don't. But I think we all understand in life there's a certain kind of unsatisfactoriness, and we try to find the way to make ourselves whole, and we feel outside of the understanding of other people. So that's not such a strange thing. I don't equate that only to artists.
Has acting made you a more empathetic person in general?
One would think, because it exercises the possibility to see, you know, yourself in a wider way. And you start to think, well, you know, who I am is an illusion. You know, it's really about the convergence of certain conditions. And you start to understand that when you start performing. And you also understand that, you know, you're capable of any kind of behavior, really. It depends on circumstance very much. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's good practice for taking a walk in someone else's shoes. And I think on some crude level, that is some form of empathy to understand someone else's position and to think of other people's position and think of, you know, what their challenges are and what how they're feeling.
You've played a lot of, on the surface, unlikable characters, whether they're villains.
Which ones?
none come to mind at the moment. And in Vincent's case, he's not unlikable, but he's broken.
He's difficult.
So I have to imagine that you're finding things that you love or things you can understand or appreciate about someone in each of these positions.
I think that's true. Yeah, I mean, you're drawn to certain kind of fantasies or certain kind of situations that aren't you, that interest you. And I think there's a real through line to characters that I'm attracted to. I'm attracted to people that, you know, are outsiders, basically, because they have their point of view isn't something that we're familiar with. Because to play a successful, well-adjusted person, you know, really normally supports society as it is. And there's something in me. I mean, I'm quite content person, relatively speaking, but there's something in me that when you make something, there's an obligation to challenge things as the way they are. And sometimes you'll go to someone that has a different perspective and you'll want to live with that different perspective. It expands how you look at things. So I guess I'm always attracted to characters that have challenges. That's the nature of drama. Drama.
One of the reasons I liked this casting was you play Vincent as a sort of utterly guileless figure. So he's so sweet and earnest. He loves his brother. He loves his friend. And I think, I mean, it's such a cliche to talk about people associating your face or you with villains or menacing or very guileful, beguiling type characters. So I think you investing sincerity and guilelessness into this with your persona, your look, the baggage we have with previous roles was a really interesting mixture.
Ah, I think that could be true. That sincerity, that earnestness, it was natural because I was steeped in his letters and he talks a lot about sincerity. He talks a lot about truth. He talks a lot about service, you know. He was very awkward. You read the horror stories about some of the socially awkward things he did. But at the same time, yeah, he talks a lot about sincerity. So that wasn't really a choice. That's just something that happened, you know, playing these actions.
I want to talk about your relationship to the camera in this film, which is very interesting. It's moving in and out of your face and on the ground, and it's so hyperactive at times. And that has to affect your performance or your awareness of the camera in the room. I mean, that challenging to have that relationship with the camera, or what was your relationship to the camera?
You know, we were dancing partners. Benoit Delhomme, who did the operating and was the DP, you know, we were the same person. And I just got used to myself, you know. And also I've had some practice, you know, like with Lars von Trier, he used to always say, you can cut anything to anything, don't worry about where the camera is. And he would always change where the camera was. So a fluid camera is a camera that you can forget about. You know, it's inside you. So there was a fluidity and a flexibility and a kind of easiness about the camera, the relationship with the camera, that it was so in your face so often that I could forget about it. So I felt very free, very free.
I know you're not the one who made the decision, but could you explain what the concept is of the camera in this film?
I think it's to make it more experiential. You know, you aren't commenting. Anytime you move back, you're creating a perspective, you know, that says, oh, this is what we see. But if you're right in your face, you know, I think you're, you know, you were dealing with your nose, you know what I mean? That's the reality of what we're doing if the camera's right there. But if we're way back here, we're seeing a much, in a funny way, we aren't, yeah, you know, being in your face is being in your face. You know, you're there with him. That really is Julian's choice. But yeah, that was, I think that the film functions well on that level, that you feel like you're with him.
Yeah, I mean, even when it's not in your face, it's so kinetic and shaky and handheld, and it evokes the recklessness of the painting itself with just the way that we're experiencing it viscerally.
Yeah, I remember in the press notes reading that Benoit used to say to Julian, isn't it too shaky? I feel like a war correspondent or something like that. And Julian said, life is shaky.
True words. You've got some great actors in this, Mads and Oscar. And when you're on a set and acting a scene with great actors like that, is there a competitive thing that comes out, or do you bring each other up? What's the dynamic there?
Well, we would hope that we bring each other up. And, you know, it really depends, you know, what the schedule's like, what the character's like, that sort of thing. That impacts on how people enter. For example, I'm there working every day. And as we say, I'm a collaborator. Julian, Benoit and I and Louise, we're all the same person. We're working together. Then these other actors come in for a day or 2 days or 3 days, and they have to come to the world. So the difficulty's on them, because we're already settled and we're already in a rhythm and we've laid down the world, and now they have to enter the world, which is reflected in the actual scenes themselves. Because the truth is, when you think about it, you're hanging out with Van Gogh, painting, walking through nature, just doing what he does to get through the day. And then he keeps getting interrupted by these people, practically speaking, or Gauguin visits. It's an intrusion, and they're coming into the world. So the difficulty is more on them than on me, because they're coming to my house. But it's also structured that way. You know, Mads plays an authority figure. Gauguin plays a guy passing through. I mean, you see it before he's even there. You know, we talk about him, and then when he arrives, we know he's passing through. So it's like the reality of the shooting informs the reality of the scenes.
Right, which I imagine isn't always the case when it can be that perfect.
No, sometimes, you know, sometimes I always feel like, I feel like people don't talk about this, but when you work on a movie, every time it's different, for me anyway. And you have to adjust your process and your research and your approach to performing by what you're doing. And that's one of the first things you ask, try to figure out, what are we doing here? And when you come in and you're not the principal character that's working every day, sometimes you got to go in there and say, how can I contribute here? What's my function here? Am I a narrative device? Do I really have to push something? Do I have to upset it? Do I have to let it roll over me? You've got to decide those things.
How method did you get in terms of not bathing?
I like a good bath. I guess not very method. You know, it was very cold. It was very cold. So at the end of the day, old Willie likes a hot bath.
I'm glad for the sake of your co-stars. Do you think it's unfair?
I don't stink anyway. I can go days without bath and I smell like ice cream.
I believe you. Although I really felt I could smell Vincent in that scene where the woman complains about his odor.
Okay, good. Good. We tricked you.
Do you think it's unfair that all these great young male roles are going to older actors? That's a joke.
It better be. Boy, how weird is that? You know, people sometimes don't have an imagination. Everybody thinks, you know, Van Gogh was 37. The average guy died in France in the 1890s when he was 40. Van Gogh had a whole life before he started painting. He was a missionary. He was a school teacher. He was a student of painting. He did many things. People's perception is he's this young guy. Not really. I mean, so it's about right. And I can't imagine a young guy having the kind of, you know, certain roles you need a little time. Because as you get older, your relationship to death and certain existential things, that just can't be acted. It's in your body. It's in your biology. So I just think that you needed someone my age to play this role, to give it the proper consideration and weight.
Well, when it comes back to the way you decided to recreate his paintings, you were honoring the soul of his recklessness and not just a facsimile of what you see on the surface. So I feel like what you just said, honoring the old soul or the, you know, the things he'd experienced and seen and lived through rather than literally a 37-year-old actor.
Right. I think, yes. And I think, you know, to honor something else, you got to make a third thing. That's all it is. To express a work of art, you've got to make another work of art. So I think that's true. It's interesting, and it's important. It's an important lesson to understand. And it's what Van Gogh teaches us through his paintings is, you know, we're so geared towards function. We're so geared towards measuring things, to weighing things, to what is useful. You know, great art is deeply useful, but on the surface, it's not useful in a way we know it's useful because it works on our hearts and on our minds, but it doesn't pay the rent and it doesn't feed people, you know? And we get so used to your average person, their idea of art is restricted to just representation and function and likeness and celebrating something by being photographic about it. I mean, that's a little harsh, but you get the idea. Where if Van Gogh is the poster boy of anything, he's a guy that deeply reached into, you know, he talks about all the time about finding what's eternal and what's temporal, you know. He also talks about art is a greater, can be a greater reality, not as an escape, but to penetrate what is really going on. I mean, if you think of painting as a device to really explain what's going on, I think that gets more to the point. He constantly talks about tying your heart to the invisible rather than the visible. He was a great admirer of Millet, and he talked about there's more soul in Millet's sower than there is in seeing a man in the field sowing.
Did that change or affect your worldview, your life philosophy at all?
I think so. I mean, hell, every film does, but this one more so than most. Really, the having Julian, you know, really be intimate with me with the painting changed how I see. And when you change how you see, there's a shift there. I am forever changed by this experience, really.
At Eternity's Gate, starring Willem Dafoe and directed by Julian Schnabel, is in select theaters on Friday, November 16th. For Arts Alive, I'm Tim Grieving.